and happy we can have a courage mass, even though we're fewer than we have been in the past. It's still a privilege. Actually, every mass is a privilege, so we give thanks to God. This has been a very big week for us here in Anawim. As you probably know, our co-founder, Sister Barbara, died here on Wednesday, there in that building. And she's the spiritual mother of our whole community, so this is a big loss for us. We had the wake here, the body was laid out here, on a Thursday and Friday, and then the funeral mass, which was the last mass that we've had in this chapel, was here on Saturday morning. In fact, I don't know if you're that familiar with the chapel, but you might have noticed that the center aisle is wider than it used to be. We pushed the pews a little bit to the side so to make room for the coffin, which is right here in front of the altar. So that was the funeral mass yesterday, and then she was cremated, and her remains are here in front of the altar. You see that box there, and then there's a picture of her too, a beautiful picture, the flowers. So that's been my experience of these past several days, and it's a little hard for me to get back to focusing on the liturgy. But let's try. Certainly the dominant theme of today's readings is that of Jesus as the shepherd. In the church year, the fourth Sunday of Easter is always designated as Good Shepherd Sunday. But these readings today seem like the readings for Good Shepherd Sunday, chosen to bring us to this very theme. It's a beautiful theme. The first reading comes from Jeremiah's prophetic denunciation of the bad shepherds of his time. We're not talking about shepherds of sheep, we're talking about spiritual leaders, so bad spiritual shepherds, people who mislead and scatter the flock of the Lord. We all know the harm that bad shepherds have done to the church. The clerical sexual abuse scandals, which seem never to go away, are enough of a reminder to us of the effect of having bad shepherds. So Jeremiah's prophecy is a relevant one. Even the personal experiences of many Courage members might come back to mind in light of this denunciation of bad shepherds, because I know many members of Courage who have looked to priests for truth and love and have instead found errors and false compassion or judgment. That's part of the sad truth. We know, in other words, we know what Jeremiah is talking about here. That people have been driven away from the Lord and from the church by the very leaders who are supposed to lead us to the Lord and to the church. That's the tragedy of it. Now, on the positive side, when we're looking at this reading from Jeremiah as a whole, the positive side far outweighs the negative side, the scandals and the tragedies. On the positive side, we have the Lord telling the prophet what he's going to do about this problem. And he gives four quick points, which they come by so quickly, you might not even notice it. You might miss the significance of what the Lord promises here. First of all, he says he's going to punish the evil deeds of the bad shepherds. So he will bring justice in his time. Secondly, he says, I myself will shepherd the scattered sheep, the remnant. I will serve as their shepherd. And thirdly, he says, I'm going to appoint shepherds who will shepherd my sheep rightly. I'm going to give good shepherds to replace the bad shepherds. And then fourth, he says, I'm going to raise up a descendant of King David. This is a messianic prophecy now. I'm going to raise up a descendant of King David, who will be the king. This king will reign and govern wisely. He shall do what is just and right in the land. That's the Messiah. And it's all contained in the first reading. Add to this the beautiful Psalm, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And I'm not talking about any human leaders. The Lord himself is my shepherd. There is nothing I shall want. Which does not mean there's nothing I will desire. It means I won't be lacking anything. Of course, we will still want things. It's part of our nature. We always want more. But we won't be lacking anything we need when the Lord is our shepherd. And then we have this beautiful gospel passage in which Jesus very clearly fulfills the vision of Jeremiah and the hope of Psalm 23. Jesus acts as the good shepherd, first for his own apostles who need a break, and then for the crowds. He tries to bring the apostles to a deserted place. He should have brought them here. It looks like a deserted chapel. Anyway, then he reveals his shepherd's heart for the crowds. Who could not be moved by this line? When he saw the vast crowd, his heart was moved with pity for them. For they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. It's a beautiful thing to reflect on. We get a glimpse of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. He's moved with pity. He's a shepherd, and they don't have one, so he's going to take that role. That's why he has come. He forgets himself, he sacrifices himself, his own desire for rest, and he feeds his flock. He feeds them with the divine word. He teaches them many things. Whenever anyone complains that my homilies are too long, I should point to this passage. Jesus teaches many things. He gives long homilies. Maybe that wouldn't work, though, because I can't claim to be as interesting as Jesus. But anyway, the shepherd provides many things for his sheep. Encourage, no one ever complains about long homilies. That's why I feel free to expound on these things in the Courage Masses. But if you do think they're too long, you tell the leaders and the leaders will tell me. I can always cut back. Anyway, let's think a little bit about a shepherd. What does a shepherd provide for his sheep? He provides many things. At least a good shepherd does. He provides food, verdant pastures, a place of repose. He provides protection, security, guidance, freedom from fear, rest. Now, that's just shepherds for animals. What about the when we go beyond the shepherd-sheep image and go to spiritual shepherds, spiritual leaders, what do they provide for their sheep? Well, they provide spiritual food, spiritual protection, spiritual guidance, rest. And this is what Jesus does. Jesus provides the sheep. Now, this is a crowd of people seeking him. The first thing he does is teach them. Truth is food for the soul. The Word of God feeds us. A spiritual shepherd gives us the truth, gives us the Word, gives us guidance in the way of righteousness, gives us knowledge of what is right and just. But for today, I want to focus on only one of the gifts that a shepherd provides, the gift that Jesus, the Good Shepherd, provides, and that is rest. I want to just focus on this idea of rest, or what the psalm calls repose. How does it say it? In verdant pastures he gives me repose, beside restful waters he leads me. He refreshes my soul. This is the same thing I think that's indicated in today's second reading, which emphasizes peace. Christ is our peace. Peace for those who are near, peace for those who are far off, peace for everyone. This idea of peace is the same as what I mean by rest. maybe I'm drawn to this idea of rest because of the death of Sister Barbara. Countless times in the past few days, we have prayed, "Eternal rest grant unto her, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon her." So we kept on praying for her eternal rest. Or, as I say, rest and peace in this context are the same. When we say eternal rest, grant unto her, O Lord, may she rest in peace. So that's the same idea. So maybe that's why this idea comes strongly to me that we should be focusing on rest. Or maybe it's just because I'm exhausted, because after 4 days of very intense activity, I'm also looking for rest. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Others are well-deserving a rest. In fact, in the middle of the week, I went over to Muntinlupa and officiated at a wedding. That was right on Friday. So right in the middle of all this we're doing, I had to shift gears from mourning to rejoicing. I'm happy to do it. In fact, God's providence often stretches us like that, but it is draining, I have to admit. It's tiring. Okay, so the gospel itself, Jesus himself acknowledges that sometimes we need rest, yes. The shepherds need rest too. The apostles needed a break. And so Jesus says to them, "Come away by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." It's a good plan. It didn't work this time, of course, but the principle is correct. There are times when we need some rest, and so we should take that time. But rest, as we all know, is an elusive goal. And it's not only because people might show up in the deserted place and interfere with our plan. It's elusive because it's deeper than we might think. It's a deep spiritual longing. It's easy to get physical rest. If that's all we're looking for, just sleep in, take a day off. Well, take a little break, and you can be refreshed physically. It's something like physical hunger. No, when we have physical hunger, all we have to do is eat. Once we eat, we're not hungry anymore. It's that easy. On the physical level, very easy. But spiritual rest, the deeper rest that we hunger for, that's not that easy. Not that easy to find. Even after we are physically refreshed, even after we've had a good meal, there's still something missing. It's still something that we don't have, and we feel it. Doesn't mean we're unhappy, but we're not fully satisfied either. This is the restlessness that God has planted in our hearts. This is the deep longing for God. I'm sure you know the famous line of St. Augustine on this topic, on this very idea. You have made us for yourselves, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. We are restless. And God made us that way because he made us for himself. So there's something in us that cannot be satisfied by anything or anyone in this world. Only God himself. Only the Good Shepherd himself. That's why this Psalm, Psalm 23, is so popular. So it speaks to us so effectively. The Lord is my shepherd. The one whom I long for is the one who provides for me. And he doesn't simply provide me with pastures and waters. He gives himself to me. The very thing I long for most deeply is what my shepherd gives me. This is a fruitful thing to reflect on, and I hope to make some sense of this for you. It's a fruitful thing to reflect on when we are dealing with temptation. Temptation typically offers us some false version of rest or of satisfaction, maybe. If I do this, if I take that, if I say this, then I will feel better. That's the temptation. I won't feel bad anymore if I can just myself with this or that. Now, the fleetingness of human, of physical pleasures, that's an obvious temptation. I will feel better physically. And maybe you will, but it doesn't last very long. We feel better until we don't feel better anymore. And then, realizing we have done wrong, we feel worse. So that's why indulgence, physical indulgence, just never works. But that's not the only level of temptation. I want to make sure we don't think that that's it. The desire for connection or the desire for some sense of accomplishment is harder to fulfill. It can drive us more. We can be tempted here too. We can be tempted to take glory to ourselves. We can be tempted to make more of ourselves, even in our own minds, than we should. Put ourselves in the place of God, that's a big temptation. Pride, of course, is at work here. And also, typically, judgment of other people. Those are big temptations. Self-satisfaction, which we also soon discover is not very satisfying. As soon as we think we should take care of ourselves or satisfy ourselves, it doesn't work. Anger is another temptation. When we're angry, we think that if we just break something or just hit someone, that will make us feel better. That's the thing. So I'm saying this because encourage, you know, we focus on lust a lot. There's a lot of other temptations. There's a lot of other elements of human nature that are giving us false ideas of rest. But here we are in a courage mass. So I think we should apply this to chastity. This is a pro-chastity movement, pro-chastity support group. The longing for rest that I've been talking about is easily twisted into the longing for some sexual pleasure, lust. Anybody who's been in the gay lifestyle knows that there's a very deep restlessness at work there. That's almost by definition the gay world. It's very restless. Because no number of sexual experiences seems to be enough. No matter how many partners a person finds, the next day, you're looking for another one. In fact, there are few ways of life less satisfying than promiscuity. Promiscuity is one of the most pathetic efforts to seek rest. Okay, and we know the secret, the answer to that is the practice of chastity. Only when we are chaste or striving to grow in chastity can we discover the rest that God provides. And it's a real deep rest. Maybe you remember this line from the Catechism. This is in the section on chastity, 2339 from the Catechism. Chastity includes an apprenticeship in self-mastery, which is a training in human freedom. People think of chastity as a restriction. No, it's a training in freedom. The alternative is clear. Either a man governs his passions and finds peace, or we could say rest, governs his passions and finds peace, or he lets himself be dominated by them and becomes unhappy. That's the only choice. Either we find rest with this governing of our passions, or we are unhappy. Now, as I reflected on this, I happened upon a poem which I knew from the past. I discovered it again. A poem that reflects on this very thing, this idea of rest. Now, I've tried to use poems in homilies before. It doesn't usually work. I read the poem and then I look out and all blank faces. So it just bombs. But and maybe that's because poems, they're deeper than discourse like this. And sometimes it's the English language and unusual words. Poems take work to interpret, and I'm supposed to be the one interpreting. So when I say to read the poem, then I put the work on you. Well, what does this poem mean? Anyway, so I hesitate to use this poem, but I'm going to take the risk. I didn't have a mass in the parish today, so I had a chance to reflect on this with a lot more freedom. So let's try this poem. This one is called The Pulley. The Pulley. It's by George Herbert, an English poet from the 17th century. I studied a little English poetry when I was in college, so this is a little bit familiar. This is from the period before what they called the Romantic poets, the period before that, the metaphysical poets. So here's the 17th century poet, George Herbert. He has lots of Christian poems. He was an Anglican priest, so you might have heard of him. Anyway, you can always, in those of you who are joining us online, you can look this up on the web easily, The Pulley. Some versions of the Liturgy of the Hours have this poem in the back of the book, in the appendix where there's poems. I have it in my Liturgy of the Hours book. Now, in the poem, Herbert doesn't mention a pulley. So we have to get the image in our mind of what's a pulley. You know, a pulley. You pull on the rope and there's a little wheel, and you pull down on this end and that end goes up. So that's the central thing. Pull down one end and the other end goes up. I looked it up in Tagalog, pulley. It says the Tagalog word for pulley is pulley. I don't know. That I looked it up online and they said, well, it's kato. Is that a real word? Kato? Kato? Anyway, the first Tagalog version of pulley was pulley, so I hope you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it's like a wheel. Here's the poem, The Pulley. When God at first made man, having a glass of blessings standing by, let us, said he, pour on him all we can. Let the world's riches, which dispersed lie, contract into a span. So strength first made a way, then beauty flowed, then wisdom, honor, pleasure. When almost all was out, God made a stay, perceiving that alone of all his treasure, rest in the bottom lay. For if I should, said he, bestow this jewel upon my creature, he would adore my gifts instead of me, and rest in nature, not the God of nature. So both should losers be. Yet let him keep the rest, but keep them with repining restlessness. Let him be rich and weary. That at least, if goodness lead him not, yet weariness may toss him to my breast. The pulley. We pull down for rest, and we rise up to God. You see the point. God has all these blessings that he's pouring out on us. He gives us all of them, except he doesn't give us rest. That's the one in the bottom of the glass. He doesn't pour the whole thing out. Leaves us restless. Deliberately leaving us restless, it says, so that we will not be satisfied with all the creatures, with any creature, only with the Creator. And this, you know, this can seem hard to us, it can seem cruel, God leaves us restless, but in fact, it's his great love. It's a very great gift of love, because God, our good shepherd, wants us to have only the best of the best. So he doesn't want us to be satisfied with anything less. The only thing that will satisfy us, the only thing that will give us eternal rest, is God himself. And this is the very gift that he offers us. So as we're pulling for anything else, this is the last line of the poem, no? Let him be rich and weary, no, blessed but also restless. Let him be rich and weary, that at least if goodness lead him not, if goodness doesn't move us to God, then weariness may toss him to my breast, or weariness will make us turn to God. So if His goodness, if all the blessings we have doesn't move us to Him as they should, with gratitude, at least being restless makes us search for God. Okay, so that's a little reflection on rest and on the Good Shepherd. We open our hearts to the gift of this Good Shepherd here in the Mass. When the psalm says he's going to spread the table before us, well, this is the table. And the Eucharist is the food that we really long for. It's He Himself will fill us with His own eternal rest.